Hi, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And this is Cousins on
Crime.
Guys, thanks for coming back for more. You know I like to bring upbeat, positive, touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy stories.
Yeah.
And today we actually have a special guest in my closet with us. It's my sister, Kennedy.
Hi.
Yeah, girl. Come and say hi.
I said, be quiet. Don't make a sound. Anyway, yeah, she surprised me by coming to visit me and, you know, the show must go on. So here she is. So before I get started on the story I have for you today, I want to say that I've never researched a case with such conflicting reports in my life. There were a lot of little details about this case that had discrepancies from source to source. So I tried to find like a consensus with those details. So if you look up this case or watch the episode of Murder Comes to Town on Investigation Discovery, you might see or hear some different little things, but the crux of the story is the same. The bones are the same. And maybe the freckles are different. So here we go. Crystal Lee Houston was born in Swisher County, Texas on October 18th, 1976, and later relocated with family to New Mexico. You thought I was going to do another Texas story, didn't you?
Yes, I was like, oh, here it
you
is.
Heard Texas, and you're like, oh, here she goes again. So her legal name was actually Crystal Houston Calderea, but Calderea was her married name, and she didn't exactly particularly like her ex-husband, so I'm going to refer to her using her family name. So just if you see that name somewhere. When she was 24, she lived in a mobile home in the desert hills of Socorro, New Mexico. She had a young daughter, Cassandra. I couldn't find an age for her when this all happened, but I think she was maybe 3 or 4 around that age, maybe even 5. But she was born with cystic fibrosis.
Aww.
And if you're familiar with that, it's around the clock care for someone who has that, especially when her daughter was born. The doctors actually didn't think she was going to live.
Aww.
But Crystal was devoted to her. She never left her side. And she just nursed her back to health. I read somewhere that she was actually a nurse, so that must have helped too. But Crystal's loved ones describe her as always being willing to help everyone. She was loyal and really generous with her time and in other ways, the way she could be. She was really upbeat and friendly and really motivated to make something of herself. And I hate when I hear that. I mean, I love when I hear
right.
that, but I hate when I hear that describing a murder victim. Like, it just really pisses me off that they were headed in a direction and they never got to get there.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, she recently had moved to Socorro from Las Cruces, New Mexico, to be close to her family because a tragedy struck in her family.
Uh-oh.
You see, just 14 months earlier, on February 27th, 2000, Crystal's older sister Stephanie died at the age of 27.
Mm.
Yeah, their parents said that Crystal just fell apart when her sister was killed.
Yeah, I bet I would.
Yeah, and did you catch that? I said she was killed.
Okay.
So she was hit by a pickup truck and she died before they could get her to the hospital. Mm. Stephanie was also a mom. She had a 10-year-old and she was devoted to her partner, Patrick Murillo. Like her sister, she was also described as really positive, vibrant, always there for her friends. She managed a convenience store and worked really late shifts, so she made a lot of friends, and especially made friends with police, actually, because they were working late night shifts, and they would go into the convenience store to get, like, a drink, or maybe a donut. So they got to know Stephanie really well, and they considered her, like, a close acquaintance. The night of her death, she attended her boyfriend's show at a bar. He was in a band, and he was playing there. And she started dancing with her friend, Ruben Chavez. And this really pissed off Patrick. Mm. He was like, what are you doing? And they weren't doing anything inappropriate. Everyone at the concert, all their friends say they were just
having fun.
Like, dancing individually, just
next to each other.
They weren't grinding. Yeah, they weren't doing anything like that. But anyways, he got mad and he confronted them both. He made a huge scene and he even punched Ruben.
Ooh.
And the bouncer had to intervene
and peel them apart.
Yeah, he was like, boys, you know, behave or you're out of here. I guess because he was in the band playing, they were not inclined to kick him out. Because I feel like if this would have been any other patron, they probably would have been kicked out at this point
for fighting.
But he got to stay. And then Patrick started getting in a really violent argument with Stephanie.
Mm.
Ruben was like, I'm outie.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steph. I gotta go. So he left to go take care of some errands. I don't have details as to what those errands were, but nevertheless, he was either driving away from the bar or driving past the bar. And this is what I'm talking about when I say there were different reports, like different accounts of the details about the story. Some reports said Ruben was leaving the bar when this all went down, and some said that he went to run errands and drove back by the bar on his way home and then saw it all go down. So anyway, that's what I mean when I say, like, the little details.
Gotcha.
But you know I like the details.
Yeah.
So either way, he passed back by the bar and he saw Patrick's truck, like, sitting on the side of the road just feet up from the bar. And since it's reported that he was only feet from the bar, I assume that he was just parked there all night.
Okay.
Like, it's not like he left and then parked off to the side a few feet from the bar, you know what I'm saying? So, and all of this, you know, word vomiting that I'm doing right now has a purpose,
gotcha.
I promise. I think he was parked there and hadn't actually left. So this does matter. I'm getting to my point, I promise.
I believe you.
So the reason this matters, besides, you know, I obsess over the details, is that it explains how Stephanie might have been run over.
Mm.
Ruben saw the truck and then suddenly saw it kind of lunge forward and jerk to a stop. He couldn't really see what was going on, but it kind of felt off to him. It looked weird. Like, you know, you would probably think that was weird if you saw someone's truck that you knew and they were like,
rev up and then.
Yeah. So he kind of got closer and that's when he saw Stephanie had been run over by the trailer that was attached to the back of Patrick's truck. So 911 was called. When police came, they questioned Patrick and the other witnesses that were present. Patrick said they were having an argument. Stephanie exited the truck, and as he drove off, she tried grabbing, like, the bed of the truck and just kind of slipped under as he was driving off. So slipped under the trailer in the back. Police were like, okay, you know, that kind of sounds plausible. But later, they ended up arresting him and charging him with vehicular manslaughter because they started piecing some other things together, like statements from friends that were close to the couple. They would talk about how horrible Patrick was to her, and her parents even confirmed this.
Oh, man.
And he'd even confided in a friend that he was going to leave the scene after he hit her.
Ooh.
But people started arriving, and he was like, oh, they
can't leave now.
Exactly. And witnesses even said that she wasn't even in the truck and got out. She was walking kind of alongside the truck. If that makes sense, like, she was walking past his truck.
Gotcha.
And so maybe she was like, I'm just gonna walk, you know, or I'm gonna get a ride with a friend or something. And he was like, get in the truck.
Right.
But Stephanie's autopsy report actually stated her cause of death as a homicide. I couldn't find any details as to why the medical examiner felt it was a homicide, but there must have been some kind of evidence to point them in that direction. And I'd love to ask Joseph Scott Morgan this question. If you don't know him, he's the host of a podcast called Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan, and I love him.
You should send him an email.
Yeah, exactly. They can tell these things by certain injuries, positions of injuries, and they take into account the statements from witnesses. So if people say, you know, she was standing off to the side, or and then she had a specific injury that was at odds with maybe what Patrick said.
Yeah, it didn't match up.
Yeah, that kind of lends them in the direction of, you know, deeming something a homicide. Mm-hmm. Anyway, her parents felt like he had run her over on purpose all along because they just
knew that's the kind of person he was.
Exactly. So Patrick was eventually tried for vehicular manslaughter, and a jury found him not guilty. And her death was ruled an accident. I don't know that I've ever heard of someone's death being ruled an accident after someone was acquitted for a manslaughter charge, but most reports I read kind of referred to it in this way, like he was tried, found not guilty, and then her death was considered an accident.
Gotcha.
I don't know. It's very, I don't know who we're talking about when we say considered, like who considered this an accident. Are we talking about law enforcement, the court?
Gotcha. Or
like general population? I don't know. But anyhow, they didn't get justice for her death. So Stephanie's death shook the family and the town, really. Like I said, police had gotten really close to her, and her father, Bill, was well known in their small town. So naturally, his friends were crushed, you know, just watching her grow up as a kid, and she had lots of friends. So now you can imagine how just torn Crystal must have been by her sister's death. And you know, Crystal was a caregiver to a child with special needs, as we discussed earlier, so that's really stressful. And then having to deal with, you know, healing from your sister's death, and it was just really a tough time for her. So
bless her heart.
Yeah. Like I said, she had moved to Saguaro to be near family because the truth is that she really wasn't doing a good job with coping with all of this. She had gotten into drugs and alcohol. On April 15th, 2001, Crystal's mother, Joyce Fisher, went to check on Crystal after she didn't show up for scheduled Easter lunch. In fact, she had been unreachable for several days at that point. I saw several days. I saw a few days. So let's just say people couldn't reach her for, you know, a couple days, and then they got worried about her. Joyce walked up to her daughter's front door and knocked and waited, knocked again, and got no answer. And she kind of noticed Crystal's car wasn't in the driveway, so she was like, it didn't strike her as, oh, she's not home, I'll try again. She just was like, something's not right here. You know, it was like her motherly intuition was kicking in. She went across the street to talk to this neighbor that she kind of knew of Crystal's and asked for him to help her enter the home. She was like, can you help me get in somehow? So he took a butter knife and they went over and he kind of like jimmied her door open and immediately he smelled a foul odor. He said, you need to just step back because I've smelled this before.
Oh.
And she's like, huh? And just an innocent,
not
thinking that her daughter's dead inside or anything. And then it clicked with her, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So she kind of peeked inside, and on the floor she could kind of see some legs sticking out just inside the doorway. And she just thought, no, I can't be doing this again. Like, I cannot be doing this again. So a woman was found on the floor in the home. Her sweatshirt was pulled up over her head, and her pants and panties were pulled down. Some reports say her pants were entirely off and laying next to her body. Some say they were pulled down. Nevertheless, the investigators immediately thought she had been sexually assaulted because of that. Now, right away, they suspected it was Crystal because they knew her. They knew her sister. They knew what had happened a year prior. They knew her family, and they recognized her. So they just were like, oh, man. They could see that she had been beaten severely. She had marks all over her neck and her head, her legs.
What in the world?
Just all over. Yeah. Only one of her socks was on. And she was bloody. There had obviously been a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of looking at all this stuff. Another thing they noticed was that just by looking at her, they could tell she had been dead a couple of days. She was already decomposing. And of course, the smell was already permeating the home. They went outside to talk to her mom, because even though they suspected it was her, they kind of needed a confirmation. They asked her for any identifying marks that she may have had. And her mom said, well, she's got a cross tattoo on her ankle. And she knew immediately by their expression that it was Crystal in there. She couldn't believe that she was going through this all over again.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
No.
Like losing an adult child and then losing another adult child. Just can't imagine that. My God. Poor Joyce and her dad.
And yeah, but in this manner, like,
I know.
Killed the first time and then now this.
Exactly. Not even an accident. Just
right.
Like. So Joyce told investigators the only person she could think of that could have done this was Crystal's ex-husband. He had filed for custody of their daughter, and they were at each other's throats over this. She was like, no, you're not having her. I'm having her. So they were just at odds with each other. And this is like the first thing she can think about. Like, I mean, it's got to
be
him.
The only person that you think,
yeah, exactly. Investigators got to work combing over the scene. They saw some beer bottles inside, like there had been some sort of gathering, like nothing too crazy, not a rager or anything, but beer bottles, multiple, and it looked like there had been a couple of people there. They noticed a remote in the living room, but there was no TV, and they were like, okay, so the TV's been stolen.
Okay.
Obviously. So this must be a robbery gone bad. Then they noted a picture frame containing a photo of Crystal and her daughter that had been broken on the floor. And that struck a new chord with them. They felt like maybe this might be a little more personal than just a robbery gone bad. And speaking of things that were taken, I mentioned that her car was gone. So they said, well, she's here. So obviously,
her car
was stolen. Mm-hmm. They hit the streets. They were talking to neighbors, and they spoke with the next door neighbor, a lady, and informed her of Crystal's murder and said, did you hear anything? Did you see anything? And she was absolutely shocked because her son Jason had just started dating Crystal.
Uh-oh.
When I say just started dating, I mean they had been seeing each other for like a little over a week.
Oh.
Yeah. So they brought Jason down to the station and questioned him right away. Jason said the last time he saw her was a couple nights before on Thursday. He was at her house, they had some drinks, Crystal got drunk, she got crunk, and for some reason, he took her keys, her car keys, because he was like, okay, you shouldn't drive. I don't know what, why.
Where's she gonna go? Like,
yeah, I don't know if she said or did something that made him think that she was going to drive off or go somewhere. But anyway, he took her keys and automatically they're like, okay, this is fishy. He took her keys. Her car's missing. What's going on here? So that made her really mad. They got into a huge fight and he was like, you know what? I'm going to go over to my mommy's house so we can cool off and I'll come back in a bit. You know, when you've chilled out a bit. A little while later, he went back over there, and she was still mad at him. Okay, I'd be mad too. Like, give me my keys.
Yeah.
Give me my possessions and go away.
Who are you after?
For a little
after,
over a week. I didn't even know you like that. So a little while later, he went over to Crystal's house. She was still mad, so he drove into town. He says he left and, like, to blow off some steam. He drove away. When he got back, so he comes back to his mom's house, he saw a brown Ford truck out in front of Crystal's house. So he was like, who's that? Now she's got somebody else over there. So he parks up across the street and just kind of watched. And he sat there for a while and he saw Crystal come out with two guys and they left in this brown truck. He didn't know who these guys were, but he was confused as to, you know, they get in this fight and now she's got two more guys over there. So he was like, whatevs. So police were like, we don't trust this guy. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're going to just take this girl's car after a week of dating her. Like,
well, he took her keys and then he goes and then he comes back and like parks across the street and he's watching her. So they were just like, yeah, you're kind of weird, dude. Like, this is like, you don't know this girl too well. Yeah. Another thing that struck them as odd is he said that when he went back to her house the next day to check on her, she didn't answer. And they were like, okay, you went to check on her? And he's like, yeah, I left a note on her door. You know, I knew she was mad, blah, blah, blah. They were like, okay, we found no such note, so that's a lie.
It
they
blew
just
away
like,
in the wind.
Yeah, it could have blown away. If you're lying about this note, like, what else could he be lying about? But even though they had their suspicions of Jason, they had no evidence linking him to anything at the scene, so they had to let him go. They did ask him for a DNA sample before he left, and he willingly gave that and left. Then the detectives wanted to talk to the ex-husband because that's kind of the first person they wanted to talk to. But then this Jason guy came into the picture. So Hector Calderea was Crystal's ex-husband. The day after Crystal was found, they went to speak with him at his home. And he had their daughter, Cassandra. He said the last time he saw Crystal was the Thursday that Jason says he saw her last, and they were meeting up to exchange their daughter. He was there, you know, to pick her up from Crystal and take her for the weekend. They met in a parking lot. The exchange went fine. They parted ways. He says, I don't even know where Crystal lives. She just moved and, you know, she just moved into that place and he didn't know where it was. He didn't even know her address. Whatever.
So whenever they exchanged their daughter.
Yeah, they did it in a parking lot, like at a mini mart or something.
Okay.
Like a grocery store, you know, in between their homes. So they had met in a public place to do that. And the police didn't believe him either. They were just like, we don't believe you either. This is all, like, the suspects are starting to add up. We're just getting the heebie-jeebies from all these people. Then the creep factor continued when the police learned that the neighbor that helped Joyce enter Crystal's home that day was a little too friendly with Crystal.
Okay.
Crystal's dad, Bill, told them that Crystal wasn't a fan of this guy. He was coming over all the time to check on her, and her dad was just like, she doesn't need you checking on her. Like, she's got a dad, she's close with her family, like, you do not need to be coming over there. And
not to mention, he had already stated he's smelt this smell before of...
Yeah.
Rotting flesh.
Yeah. Good point. He never explained where he had smelled that before, but that's right. A good point. Bill insisted that they look at him for the crime. So they checked him out. They went over to talk to this guy. His name was Ted.
Bundy?
Sadly, no. That would have been a really cool twist. The neighbor says that he was not clingy with her because of anything like nefarious. He didn't fancy her or anything like that. He said, I was just looking out for her because of the company she kept. She had this new boyfriend and he was always yelling at her. They were always fighting, which they had only been dating for a week, so I don't know like, where he gets that. But yeah. He says she was running with the wrong crowd. She had weird people over.
Interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, she lost it when her sister died, so this was just the way she was coping. She was doing drugs, drinking, you know, having people over. She went a little bit off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
So this neighbor, he said, see, look, her boyfriend left this ridiculous note on the door, and pulls out this note, this handwritten note, and hands it to the investigators, and they're like, this is the note he left. Like, okay. Why did you take this? And he's like, well, I took it off the door, and I thought it was stupid. They're like, okay. So then they're like,
but it's
okay,
not yours
maybe.
To take.
Yeah, I don't know why he took it. It's very bizarre, but they were thinking maybe Jason was telling the truth after all. And, you know, Jason's timeline kind of lined up with her ex-husband's timeline of when he last saw her. So they're starting to kind of put Jason off to the side.
Okay.
Now, Crystal's autopsy found that there was blunt force trauma to her head, and she had drugs and alcohol in her system. But the toxicology report stated that she didn't even have enough in her system to kill her. In fact, her father, Bill Houston, said in a blog post that the amount of substance that was in her system wasn't even enough to kill a 12-year-old.
Okay.
So, also in that examination, they were able to confirm that she had been sexually assaulted. There was semen found in her body. And ultimately, the medical examiner concluded that her cause of death was undetermined.
Okay.
Well, that's not good enough. Because
no.
It's not undetermined. She was obviously killed. So there was another post-mortem examination because her family was like, are you joking me? Undetermined? Like,
what
and
is
they,
that
they
even?
Said undetermined because of the drugs and alcohol that were in her system. They thought, well, she could have overdosed. She could, but she was beaten. Like,
yeah. Where did the bruises come from?
Exactly. So the second examination ruled that her death was a homicide and she died by strangulation and blunt force trauma to the head. Detectives decided to go and use this newfound evidence from her toxicology report because they thought, okay, she was doing drugs. So let's go talk to Manny, the local drug dealer. Police knew him. He was well known around town for selling everybody drugs, and he was kind of like in the know about what was going on in town. And Manny was pretty cordial with the police. The police had a lot of dealings with him. They treated him with respect. Maybe he got in trouble for some things, but they really used him as a resource. So he told them that he saw Crystal Thursday night, just like everybody else had. Mm-hmm. And she had come to his house with her friend A.B. Chavez, which if you... I see you. Chavez. Now, I couldn't find any information to say that A.B. Chavez and Ruben Chavez were related. You know, Ruben Chavez was Crystal's sister's friend.
Yeah.
Chavez is also a really common last name in New Mexico, so I don't know if they were related or not, but I like to think they were, just because it was a small town, you know, everyone was friends with everyone, you know, friends and family. This doesn't matter, but you know, I'm going off on a tangent here. And they were also with another guy. So these are the two guys that she was seen with. And he didn't know who the other guy was, but he said they also brought a TV and some money. And the police were like, okay, so she brought the TV for drugs.
To pay for her drugs, okay.
Exactly. So they're like, okay, it wasn't a robbery. So now they're getting all these little details from different people, and they're piecing it all together. Things are starting to make sense and, you know, look a little more clear the more and more they talk to people. So she did trade the TV for drugs. And, hey, she was resourceful. You know what I mean? You got to hand it to her. She kept the remote, though. She kept the remote. So I don't know how good the TV was without the remote. So they tracked down A.B. Chavez because they're like, okay, you know, each person we talk to, it's like telephone. We're getting another piece of information and we're going down the chain talking to all these people. So they get with A.B., and he was absolutely shocked to hear that Crystal was murdered. He cried. I mean, they, it was a genuine shock. He said they were like family. He was like, Crystal was like a sister to me. And he told the police that when they left the drug dealer's house, he and Crystal and this other guy they were with, a fellow named Ramon Lopez, they all went back to Crystal's and did some drugs and drank. That explains the beer bottles.
All the beer bottles. Okay.
AB says he ended up leaving, but Ramon stayed there. He kind of mentioned that it was a little bit awkward because Ramon came on to Crystal a little bit earlier in the night, and she pretty much ignored it. Like, it was, you know, when back in the day when you were hit on and you're like, yeah, I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen.
but he's going to leave him alone with her?
Yeah, he didn't explain why he left, but he did say that Crystal didn't flirt with him or anything to kind of indicate that she was interested in him touching her. But AB didn't feel like he was leaving her in a dangerous situation, so I don't know why he left, but he ended up leaving and Ramon stayed. Now, AB agreed to give a DNA sample. In fact, they call it a sexual assault kit. He felt a little awkward doing that, too, because he was like, there's no way I would ever do anything to her. And they're like, look, it's just protocol. We want to rule you out. He's like, fine. So he gives them a DNA sample, and he leaves. Now, in a turn of events, Assistant Chief Angel Garcia knew the name Ramon Lopez. He'd grown up with him. He knew him. Oh. He knew his family. And so did Lieutenant Earl Higgs, who was also working the case. I mentioned this was a small town. Police knew Crystal, her sister, her family. And now they know this guy. So everyone knows everybody. So they were like, okay, we've narrowed it down to the last person who may have seen Crystal alive. So let's go talk to him. They went over to his mother's house and he wasn't there. They checked with some other family members and they're like, you know what? We haven't seen him in a few days. We haven't seen or talked to him since Thursday.
What day?
I need it. Thursday. It's all coming back to Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They keep looking for him. They're looking around town. They're talking to his friends. Nobody's talking. And while they're kind of still looking for him, they're over here on the side doing other things in the case. They're looking for Crystal's car. You know, they're talking to other people, trying to get more pieces to the puzzle. Now, days go by, and then a week goes by. And Angel Garcia, the assistant chief, he's sitting in his living room, probably popping open a TV dinner, you know, just hanging out. And he sees this picture flash up on the screen, like this news report. And who was it but Ramon Lopez on his TV? Now, the report was about a carjacking in Albuquerque. And the picture on the screen was Ramon Lopez, but the name under the picture was his brother's name. So he was using his brother's name. Jaime. I didn't actually write all this down, so I don't remember what the last name was, but it was a different last name, different first name. So Angel is like, okay, he's stealing a car in another city. He's using another name. Like, this, he's obviously guilty. Like, this doesn't look good for him.
No.
So Angel got in touch with the Albuquerque PD, and they told him he was found in Crystal's car. So he was pulling the onesie-twosie, you know, the whole steal a car so you can ditch the stolen car that you already have.
Uh-huh.
So now they have Ramon in Albuquerque, and they have the car. So they start processing the car. They were, you know, there was beer can in there. There was soil on the floor. They're testing all this stuff. They even saw blood in the car. Then they obtained a DNA sample from Ramon because they did have all these little pieces of evidence, but they needed something concrete, like something DNA wise.
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't you know it, it was a match for the semen found on Crystal.
Well,
Got him. I'm sorry. I blacked out. I got really excited. So Ramon was detained in Albuquerque because of the carjacking. They're like, you know, we're going to make him stay here first and serve out the time for the carjacking. Then you can have him. I'm not familiar with this type of thing. Usually I've always heard of someone being transported back to, you know, where they came from to serve that sentence first, because the murder happened before the carjacking. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah.
But nevertheless, he ended up being in Albuquerque in the prison there for 4 years. And when the last leaf fell on the calendar and hit the floor, Saqqaro authorities were there picking up his butt and bringing him back to Saqqaro.
Hey, Ramon.
That's right. Exactly. They're like, okay, you're going to stand trial now for Crystal's murder. So let's talk about the trial a little bit. There's not a whole lot of details, but in 2005, so this was, like I said, 4 years after, Ramon was charged with felony murder, second degree murder, criminal sexual assault, kidnapping, theft of a motor vehicle, and evidence tampering. See, slap them with all the charges you can.
Yes.
Okay? Slap them with the charges. Only one witness was called by the defense because, like, what are you going to do? Jeffrey Nine, he was a medical examiner, and he testified that he felt like the first autopsy that ruled her death as undetermined was correct.
What?
Wow.
It's not undetermined.
Compelling. I mean, I don't know. Great. Thank you for that.
Flabbergasted.
Yeah, so that was exactly, that's all they could really do. But in 2007, the jury was out for just 4 hours and they returned a guilty verdict on all counts. And he was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole. And he'd be eligible for parole in 2035.
Okay.
Well.
I know. Do not tell me he got out.
In 2012... Ramon's defense challenged some of the evidence that was used against him in the trial. They tried to suppress some of the evidence that was produced by a pathologist who had passed away. I guess they felt like since he had passed away, they had a really good chance of challenging his report or what have you. But he was successful in getting his sentence reduced from life to 15 years.
That is so disgusting.
Yeah. 15 years. What's even worse is that he was out just 3 years later in 2015.
Oh my. Candace, yeah. We just talked about this. Like,
I know.
It's, we have to keep these people safe, and you're letting these people out to roam the streets and do it again.
Yep. Well, it gets worse. Oh, geez. It gets Lord worse, and me. I wish I was kidding. He got out, and as dirt bags do, he screwed up again. He violated his parole.
Could have told you that.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Totally surprised. This is brand new information. He served a few more years for violating his parole, and he was released again in 2018.
Of course he was.
Of course. Mm-hmm. That's the worst part, because you have this repeat offender. He's obviously violent. And, okay, you know what? You violated your parole. First of all, he shouldn't have had his sentence reduced in the first place.
No.
Secondly, he's violated his parole and he's back in for just a few more years and now he's out again.
Right. Ugh. Just 4 years ago. So, I mean,
right.
Watching the time go by, let's see what else he does.
I know. And he'll be back. He'll be back in.
Yeah.
He's going to do something else stupid because he got away with it the first time, essentially. He has to register as a sex offender, which is interesting. I don't know if that's a state of New Mexico thing, but I don't know if it's if you get convicted of a criminal sexual assault, like that was involved in a murder, you know, that he has to register as a sex offender. I always thought it was, you know, the underage kind of element for people who have to register as a sex offender, but that's a good thing.
I think it's all across the board, yeah.
Yeah. Well, now I know. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
But that is a good thing because now he's got that stain on him for the rest of his life, coupled with his rap sheet. And according to his parole information, he's still living in New Mexico, which I don't think he's allowed to really go too far as, you know, part of his parole.
Like that's going to matter.
I know. It doesn't matter. I'm just mad because why does he get to go out and go to Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
Why?
And Crystal doesn't.
Right. Well, it could be Chick-fil-A. What's the restaurant in Breaking Bad? Los Pollos Hermanos? I'm mad that he gets to go to the Chicken Brothers and enjoy his freedom. Uh-huh. Why does he get to attend family gatherings and do the little things like watch TV, go to Target, plan birthday celebrations with friends? Like, Crystal doesn't get to do any of that. She doesn't.
Does he have friends?
I'm sure he's got some scummy friends. I mean, you know, misery loves company, so they probably are all like flies on a piece of poo, just, you know, existing together. Crystal doesn't get to watch her daughter grow up. She doesn't get to find love again. And she doesn't get to overcome,
better herself.
Exactly. She was not coping well with her sister's death. I can't say I would be doing any better, you know?
Right.
And we've talked about this in previous episodes. When people are addicted to drugs, they have an opportunity to change that. Maybe they fall back into the cycle, or they get stuck in this, pattern. They're with the wrong people. But at any moment, that could change. And she never had that opportunity.
Right.
She didn't get to overcome that and break through the other side, you know?
Well, and Ramon gets the chance to change, and I hope his heart is changed. Dear Lord, I'm going to get off here, and I'm going to pray that man has been delivered. I'm going to.
Get on your knees. This isn't justice, okay? This is not justice. And let's not forget, this family has had to pick up the pieces when Stephanie was killed, and they didn't get justice for that either. Mm. It's just gut-wrenching. I'm always bringing you these tales of woe, and I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Unhappy endings. But one of these days, I'm going to tell you a good old-fashioned murder story where everyone lives happily ever after at the end. Maybe a woman whose husband was cheating on her, and she chopped off his willy, and he bled to death. Oh.
Well, that. I mean, there is a story like that.
I know. That's a feel-good murder story.
You're so
that
crazy.
That has a happy ending. I'm going to find one for you one of these days. I'm really sorry to bring you down. But the more we talk about these types of things, the more awareness we bring to all the families out there that have not had justice for their loved ones' murders. You know, we talk about, he was sentenced to life without parole, or he was sentenced to death, and the family is able to move on. Things get better by the day. It's never closure, but at least they know that person's off the street.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't happen for everyone.
Yeah.
So that's the story of Crystal and Stephanie Houston, who died tragically at the hands of two losers.
Yeah.
Especially Ramon. Like, he probably made an advance towards her. He would never talk about what happened. He never showed remorse or anything like that.
Right.
But because a girl doesn't want to have sex with you, you're going to kill her. Like,
he didn't
get
like rejection. Yeah.
Grow up. Anyways.
Rest in peace, girls.
Rip.
Yeah.
Rip. So that's it, guys. That's all I have for you today. I appreciate you hanging in there and listening.
Yeah. Thank you for working hard on.
Check out our Instagram, because I'm going to post the cutest picture of Crystal and her sister. But Crystal is sitting on this couch, and she has this cowboy's blanket hanging over the couch that she's sitting on. And I don't know if it's the bangs for me or if it's the cowboy's blanket for me, but it's just the sweetest picture. You could just tell she was fun. She just looks like...
Well, and apparently she did have good vibes, because, I mean, she had all these boys wanting to get with her.
Girl, yes. She was cute. She was slapping them off or fending them off. Beating them off with a stick.
Uh-huh.
But, So, check out our Instagram for pictures of Crystal and her sister. I don't know if I'm going to post a nasty picture of Ramon. I don't know. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't.
We need to see his face so we know who to...
Oh, we need to see his nasty face. That's right.
So we know who to look out for, you know? Like, I've seen that guy.
If you go to New Mexico, or if you're listening from New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, so we also have Facebook. We always talk about our Instagram page.
That's right. We do have a Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cousins on Crime on Facebook, so...
Yeah. We do have Facebook, if that's where you live. I don't live on Facebook, so that's not my vibe. So I always forget that some people are like, you know, Facebooking all day. And like that's where they do their thing.
So,
oh, what? Our email too. If you have any case suggestions, slide into our email.
Mm-hmm.
CousinsOnCrime@gmail.com.
Yeah. We would like suggestions on cases because it's hard to start a case to figure out what, I mean, with all of the information that we've got to review and put in the show, it's hard to come up with ideas. So let us know,
guys. Yeah, and I always feel like I start a case and I'm like, there's just something about it that doesn't vibe with me. Or I'm like, this is too similar to another case we've covered. Or, so you tell us what you want to hear. Do you want to hear more really unhappy endings? Or do you want to hear about, you know, feel good, cheater got murdered, you know, stories? You let us know.
Yes. Anyway, I hope y'all have a good week. And
Anyway.
I'm sure they're tired of hearing us say every week. Tell us what you think. We got to come up with some new.
Love you guys. Bye now.
Bye, y'all.